Go Loud presents Murder Most Irish. Find it first on the Go Loud app and on all major podcast platforms.
Me today.
What did you have to eat?
I had toast this morning with my mum.
Oh, yums.
And then I got on the train and I was like, I'm going to stench this train out of it. The farts that were coming out of me. I was so bad. And I was like, I think Mam knew, but she wasn't saying anything. She's kind of just like, I'll just accept that my daughter is farting, like there's no tomorrow. Like, it was so bad. And then I got to Connolly and I literally was, as I was walking, I was like, walking up the thing. And I'm like, bleh, bleh, all day. But I am ovulating. I don't know if that's got to do with anything.
I don't know, but I hope someone finds that sexy.
Hey, guys.
Hey, guys. It's welcome sexy. To this week's episode of the podcast.
We're back.
We're an award nominated.
We have been back.
Yeah.
This fucker said to me earlier, you won't nominate for a podcast. You don't even do episodes.
We have been nominated for a podcast award and we don't do episodes.
We've had four episodes in the last 4 weeks.
I know, but it's because
we're not here.
He is me. And I like when I didn't we didn't record together for like three months and you, I said to you, we haven't done a podcast in 3 months.
You thought we hadn't had a podcast since Christmas.
Yeah.
I was like, Sergeant, what the fuck are you talking about?
No. And I'm on the podcast.
Is it because we're not here?
I think so. It's because my routine is disrupted.
Yeah.
And I hate that Graham's in college on a Monday.
Why is that?
Because normally I'm over here recording a podcast.
But is that a problem that he's in college?
Yeah, because he doesn't finish till 10:30. So I couldn't, I couldn't leave until he kind of was like, let her come up and lie on the bed with her headphones on in the back. So she's lying in the bed behind him while he's working in college. It's a long day. And I'm going back to college in November. So my college is Tuesday.
Tuesdays.
So he's Monday, I'm Tuesday, he's then Wednesday. And then Thursday's the only day. And then Friday I've got Lily in fucking dance, drama, and singing.
Oh yeah, she's doing drama thing.
So like, honestly, this week, when I tell you, I cannot wait to get to Saturday.
Really?
Like, I'm out tonight, tomorrow for your thing.
Yeah.
Then shut up. Okay. Don't even say it.
Okay.
And then if I come home, I got to go to Cork on Wednesday. I'm in Cork Wednesday, Thursday, Friday.
Yeah.
Then I've got to get back from Cork. To be back home 4:12, I have an appointment in the hospital. Then I have to leave the hospital and drive straight to get Lily to bring her to dance and drama.
So you're 12 on Friday in the hospital?
Yeah.
What time are you fucking in Cork?
Oh, I have to get up early and just go.
Oh my God.
So yeah, anyway, that's everybody. If this goes out this week, you'll know all my movements. If anybody wants to kill me.
Don't kill Sarah Jane.
Call this episode, Don't Kill Sarah Jane.
Don't kill Sarah Jane. Sarah Jane's part of this. We can't kill her.
She's too nice.
We can't kill you. No one's going to kill you.
But yeah, we're back. We're recording. Emma's made me do an episode this week, so I'm going to do it in Cork. We're going to do a Girls on Film. I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't know. I might do an international one.
Sure.
Yeah, I might.
Whatever you feel like doing.
Oh, no, there is one case that I was kind of doing. Anyway, we'll figure it out.
It's not the same, the one I've done tonight.
Well, we'll know in a minute.
Fingers and toes crossed it's not the one that I do tonight.
This is true. Sure, and then next week it's bleeding the bank holiday weekend.
Yeah.
And so when?
Fuck, next weekend is the bank holiday weekend.
Yeah.
I totally forgot about that.
And then it's All Hallows Eve.
And then it's fucking everything Christmas. Marks and Spencer's is like Christmas up the wazoo.
Christmas trees the next.
They keep emailing me, being like, Christmas. I'm like, if you don't fuck off away from me.
Are you going to come have Christmas dinner with me this year?
I think so, yeah.
Me, Graham and Lily.
Yeah, I think.
I don't let anybody else come. I don't.
I hope you don't. Yeah. I'm fully aware that you don't. My mother is going on a cruise.
Swingers cruise.
Imagine if it
I hope Kathleen is getting the whole road off on that cruise.
She deserves it.
Yeah, she does deserve it. If that's what she wants.
She said to me the other night, Emma, I don't need... Oh, here's what she said.
Go on.
She said, Emma, I don't need a man. I don't need a man in my life. I don't like being told what to do. I understand why you're by yourself. I said, do you? Because I don't. Well, no, I do.
Yeah.
It's a full choice. It's a full choice. But yeah.
Yeah, I came home, I made an omelette for my dinner. I said, this is great. Because Graham doesn't eat omelettes. Because he's in college.
There was like a girl on Instagram the other day and she was talking about how when she was divorced, but when she was married, she was like, somebody asking you
what you want for dinner
at 9 o'clock in the morning, yeah, what you're going to have for dinner, she was like, made her homicidal.
Yeah.
And then the more she started to dislike her husband, the worse that got.
Yeah.
Because they'd be in therapy and she'd be like to the therapist, he asks me what I want for dinner. And the therapist is like,
that's a normal, reasonable thing. That's a
normal reason. He's trying to pre-plan. And she's like, I don't care. Yeah. She, just because she just didn't like him anymore.
Graham said to me on Sunday, I'll do the shop, Saturday, I'll do the shopping list now. I said, you may do it by yourself.
You're not getting involved in the shopping list.
And he came over and he sat beside me. He has, wait, this, my husband is so fucking autistic. He has he's gone through everything that we order regularly.
Oh, he's made like a regulars list.
But he's made it's categorized. So it's like dairy, bread, bakery.
Meats, protein.
Frozen. And then he was going through each category and shouting out things. And I was like, why are you talking to me?
I don't care.
He said, do you want smoothies this week? I said, do I have a smoothie every week? Yeah. I want a smoothie. I have a smoothie every morning before I go to work.
Yeah, man. Like it's tough.
I said, do you want bagels? None of your business.
Any of your business. Right?
I said, what you need to do is, I'm not here. I'm invisible. I'm imaginary.
You just get what you need to get.
I said, if you want to cook something, whatever that is, that thing you want to cook, throw that in there now and order that. I was like, I'm imaginary. I'm not here. And he said, well, I'm going to make stew on Monday. I said, fair play to you. I don't like stew.
You don't like stew.
I said, you have the greatest time of your life.
You're
making
stew.
You're
not a stew gal.
No, I fucking hate stew. He made it on Sunday.
What kind of stew do you make?
He makes like traditional beef stew.
All right.
And
like brown broth or white broth?
Brown broth. It's not a coddle.
Yeah, do you know why?
Because he's because
it's not 1942.
Yeah.
And we're not eating nettles.
Some people do.
Some people are insane.
Yeah.
So, you know what I mean?
So, no, he makes a traditional beef stew.
Okay, just hear me out. I know you hate it.
There's only one thing I like about it.
On a freezing cold day, beef stew with mashed potato and brown sauce.
I know. I can't even believe you said it. My mouth... Oh, it's Jesus. I'm telling you now, the back of my throat is wet.
It's so good. It's like I wouldn't be a regular stew gal, but... Yeah, people either like brown sauce or there's like a hatred for it.
Graham told me he hates his mom's dinner, so he used to put brown sauce all over it.
Oh,
and
no.
Now sometimes I make a Sunday dinner and he put brown sauce on it. I'd be like, are you?
Someone
and
else like, no, it's just, that I know
it's
used to
just
do that.
It's just a thing. I'm just used to it. I'm like, sorry.
It's in his brain. It's like, that's what he... Yeah.
I said, next time you give me a dinner, I'm just going to spit on it.
Did you see that video of that girl, the TikTok video of that girl? I thought it felt really bad for her mom.
Styrofoam?
No, with the... She was recorded and she was like, look what my mom made for me for dinner. And she lifted up the little thing and it was like... which is a typical country dinner. Potatoes, cabbage and like ham. Bacon.
Yeah.
But like with nothing else, just that. And she was like, what the fuck is this, man? She's like, it's delicious. And people in the comments were like, oh, it's disgusting. No.
With cabbage, parsley bacon sauce. And ham with parsley sauce.
Sorry, you're wrong.
Yeah.
It's fucking delicious.
And then you only want to eat half of it, and the next day you want to put it in a frying pan.
Later! Fucking exactly!
You want to put that in a frying pan.
Put that shit in a frying pan.
With a shit ton of butter.
Oh my god.
And you want to not move it. Let those sides go crispy.
Oh, it's so good.
And then you start moving it. And then you flip it on the other side, do the same thing.
A revelation.
And I'm telling you, a revelation.
Fucking beautiful.
Yeah. And if you're a real scumbag like me, you get batch bread.
Oh, delicious.
And you whack a load of butter on that and then you put that.
Exactly.
It's got bubble and squeak. You put bubble and squeak in between those two slices of bread.
People in the comments were like, fucking. Which, okay, fair enough. They were like, white people, fucking white people.
It is white people food.
It is white people food. But let me tell you.
Let me tell you.
Delish.
So Graham made stew. He made it yesterday.
Right.
And here's the only thing I will eat out of stew. And he also puts potatoes in his stew. So he cuts his potatoes into massive chunks.
Oh yeah, Mam does that.
So they don't break up or get mashy.
Yeah, he puts Mam's potatoes in stew, yeah.
And he then puts them in.
Yeah.
Like, make mash for the stew.
Do you know what my mum used to do? Suet dumplings.
Oh yeah, so Graham wouldn't eat a suet dumpling.
I love a suet dumpling.
But my mum would make a suet dumpling. Then Lily and Graham really like sausages in a stew. That's a very Dublin thing. That's the only thing I will eat. So I will have a sausage with the sauce on a piece of Brennan's white bread,
okay,
not
batch.
That's
good.
With butter, folded over, nom, 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 cup of
that's
tea.
That's actually really good.
And that's what I had for my dinner
really
yesterday.
Good.
I had one sausage. some white bread, and I wonder why I can't shit today.
Lodged. White bread is lodged in your sphincter right now. But like my ex used to be, because he wasn't Irish, and he would always be like, how do you eat? Like, there's no flavour. Like, but there is flavour. It's just not spices.
Yeah, no, there is.
Like there is flavour. Stew
has like, he's got thyme and rosemary. Yeah,
there's tons of like flavour.
And
in it.
Like, fair play. He actually has, he did a good job on it, to be fair. I don't like it.
I have to fart. I'm really sorry.
Sweet Jesus.
It's kind of not really bad.
Yeah. I'll throw up.
I'm sorry.
My stomach, back of my throat, if I all I have to do is think about brown sauce in the middle. Like,
sorry. It's just not, I think we're okay. I think we're okay.
But yeah, no, he did a good job. The sauce or the broth was like silky. He did a very good job. Yeah, no, he did. But he didn't put enough beef in it.
What's that Japanese stew called?
Broth?
The Japanese stew. Oh, what the fuck is the name of it?
I don't know.
Probably made it for me before. I can't remember, but it's so
tonkatsu.
I don't know, tonkatsu. You made, no, tonkatsu is the pork. You made this a Japanese stew before for me. Oh,
like beef?
Me. Yeah, it was so fucking good. I devoured it. But yeah, you know what? I know we're white. I know we're palm coloured. I know we're Irish. I know we've got all that going on. But let me tell you, fucking delicious. Bit of ham.
It says here it's called Nikujaga.
Nikujaga, is that?
That's sure? Japanese beef stew.
Could possibly be that. All I know is I fucking devoured it. It was what's delicious.
In it? I bet you the only thing in it is soy, I'd say, is different.
Whatever it was, I was like, nom, 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 nom. I absolutely devoured it. But yeah, no, I just felt bad for her mom because her mom's like, no, it's nice.
Do you ever see that guy in America who records, his mom is a terrible cook. Like, she's an atrocious cook.
Oh,
like,
I think I know who you're talking about. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that woman, she going to kill somebody.
She is going to kill somebody. You know what I also hate? Maybe people will disagree with me like this.
Go on.
You ever see those people, primarily Americans, unfortunately, that do that thing where they put like, they get a table.
And they put all the food out. Stop doing that. Is that not cold?
Stop doing that. That's disgusting. What are you doing?
Like,
what is that?
Graham always says, whenever we're watching, like, Lily's obsessed with Modern Family. And whenever something like that, he watched TikTok over my shoulder. He's always like, is the food not really cold? Like,
hold on, no, I don't mean putting it in bowls on the table. I mean when they do this like Taco Tuesday thing.
Oh, they put it on the fucking, they get like, that's disgusting.
What are they, they empty it all of the food onto the table.
Yeah.
Like, what are you
and
doing?
They like do that thing where they like wrap it in tinfoil and cling film. And
I don't
then
get
like,
it.
I'm like, why?
What are you doing?
Also, the paper plate situation is,
I was just about, you read my mind.
Like,
okay, I need an American to contact this podcast and explain to me why you're all eating off paper plates.
Yeah, if you go to like Target, Walmart, any of those in the middle aisles, they sell like hundreds of paper plates.
Oh, the amount of videos I see of Americans eating, I don't understand. What is this? Like, what is the?
They don't do dishes. That's what they feed their kids on.
Why don't they do dishes?
Because it's easier to just throw them
just
in the bin.
Just get a dishwasher. I can't.
They have dishwashers.
Y'all have enough problems.
Like,
please stop. You're already killing the planet.
But I wonder,
please,
if like maybe water prices went up or something, or maybe people couldn't like, cause,
but how much is their trash costing them? Like, can
know.
You imagine how much more trash you would have
if you got paper plates?
If you were using
paper
plates.
It's also really
plates,
bad for the environment.
I just don't, please. And it actually bothers me when they're eating and I see the meaning of paper plates. I'm like, what is this? Because I'm not, maybe I'm wrong, but you can taste it. When you're eating off those plates,
oh,
with the, like,
they do
plastic
that, yeah,
thing,
they have that thing over there where because it. People do it. So, like, I will say the quality of the paper plates is very different.
Okay.
But it's still a paper plate. Like,
know,
it's,
man,
like, you know when people drink tea out of a really cheap paper cup?
No.
And you can take, yeah, so I get what you're saying.
Those styrofoam cups?
Yeah.
They make me want to vomit.
But no, they're everywhere, like, in every, like, what's, I mean, that? Everywhere. Every shop we went into in Florida in the middle aisle, they were selling paper plates.
Can you please just message me, DM me on Instagram and explain this to me? I'm not judging. I am judging. I just don't get it. And they all have those white plates with the blue.
Yeah.
What's going on?
Plates, man.
Ew. But yeah, no, I just, obviously, the world is on fire at the moment.
I actually didn't want to come over because I was in such a bad mood.
Yeah.
Because today I'm just finding it really difficult.
It's horrible.
What's happening. And I feel like a garbage person sitting in this room having fun with my friends.
I feel like a garbage person being like, hey guys, come to my movie tomorrow. It's killing me. I hate it so much.
Yeah.
I'm like, I don't, this is what's the point? Like, what are we doing?
Yeah.
What are we doing?
Yeah.
Also, fuck Kamala Harris. And I'm just, she's on Twitter being like, hey guys, we gotta make sure that Israel put food into Palestine. Stop giving them money for bombs.
stop.
They are burning people alive in hospitals.
Yeah.
What are we doing here?
Like, that footage.
Like, it is that thing. People keep saying it as you're growing up and you're reading history books and you see what happened in Germany in Auschwitz and to the Jewish people. And you're like, how did people let this happen?
Yeah.
This is how it happened.
Yeah.
We are watching daily. Every day there is a new thing popping up on my phone. And I'm seeing people, babies' bodies. But I don't know what to do. Like, I don't know what to do. And I feel useless. I feel absolutely pointless. I'm like, what is the point of me saying anything? I'm not helping. But I don't know what to do.
Feel really useless. But I will implore anybody to share the images and the videos of that man lying in a hospital bed with a drip in his arm, on fire, unable to move, and people screaming because they can't get to him because it is so hot and it is so unsafe. And they are trying everything in their power to save this person and they can't. And if you share that or you see that and you say to yourself that it's complicated, you're a cunt.
You're
a garbage human being. If you're, I'm going to say it because I'm listening to him, but if you're the likes of like Adam Buxton, who has a platform, who have people on, who are like, oh, you know, just what you should be focusing on is the environment around you. No, you shouldn't. There is a genocide happening.
Yep.
People are being slaughtered. 17,000 children have been murdered and they're only the ones that we know of. There are people under the rubble, unaccounted for, who will never be named. Like, when this is all done, an entire generation of Palestinians will be gone. Their history is gone. Their schools are gone. Their religion, their place where they go and like practice their religion, has been wiped out from under them. Like, if you think that's complicated, go fuck yourself. It's not complicated. Yeah. What is happening is genocide. And all that's happening is America is enabling it for a fucking trade deal.
And enabling it, we're being gaslit on this scale is insane.
Being gaslit on any scale is insanity, but being gaslit as an entire, like,
being like, hey guys, you know, we're Democrats and we want to do the right thing. Here's $8 billion going to Israel so they can set babies on fire. And you have people going, well, we have to vote for somebody.
Yeah. Like, I just feel like Americans who are out there trying to like navigate this.
Yeah, I don't understand. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. And I'm so sorry to the Palestinian Americans. I'm so sorry to Palestinians around the world. I'm so sorry to Jewish people who are currently having to put up and watch this genocide happen in the name of their faith.
Yeah.
Because that is what is happening. If you do not understand that Netanyahu is using Judaism to murder people, so when people say you're wrong, he'll say you're anti-Semitic.
Yeah.
You're not getting it.
Yeah. He called Joe Biden an Irish-American Zionist.
We're in hell.
That's what he called them. In front of the media. This, they met like 2 days ago and he was like, you're an Irish-American Zionist. And Joe Biden sat there with a smile on his face.
Joe Biden.
And every Irish person was like, you're not fucking Irish.
You're not Irish. Like, first of all, you're not Irish. Second of all, do not come to our country again, because if I don't beat your old ass, somebody else will. Third, go into a home and die because I'm fucking done. Fourth, fuck the Democrats and fuck the Republicans. The Democrats are not doing anything.
No, nothing.
They're doing nothing. They're doing absolutely nothing. If I see one more famous person fucking dancing around, singing songs at a fucking rally for a politician that is paying for the genocide of an entire people, I'm going to lose my mind.
Yeah.
I'm going to lose my mind. I don't understand what's going on. I don't get it. I just can't. But then I do, because I understand that the most awful human beings on the planet are running the planet.
Yeah.
Like the most terrible, awful, awful human beings. Like, and then to be saying they wanted to flatten our peacekeepers in the Lebanon.
Yeah, they want to flatten Irish peacekeepers.
Napalm, the peacekeepers. And nobody came out and said, hey, listen, that shouldn't have been said.
No.
I don't know. I just feel like I'm going insane. And then everything, I know you're the same, but everything I do, I'm like, oh, I'm doing this, but this is going on.
Yeah, no,
oh, hey guys, good morning. Everything's terrible over there, like, and I don't know how to help, and I don't know what to do.
Like, today in work, I was like, none of this matters.
None of it matters.
Like,
none of it matters.
Like, I just feel like none of this matters, and...
I mean, if we can give people a little bit of reprieve for an hour, that's something. If that's all we can do, that's all we can do.
Yeah.
But I don't know, man. I don't know what to do. I just... My heart goes out to... I don't even know. I don't...
Anyway. Moving on.
Housekeeping.
Yeah. Housekeeping. I have no housekeeping because we haven't really... Like, Emma's doing her show tomorrow.
This will already be aired when my show is over, and it went terrible or good, Colin.
It went great.
Edit to put in whatever one it went.
Will I tell the story about Rachel getting... my friend Rachel went to Portugal, and she got home from Portugal, got on a bus from Dublin Airport to where she lives.
Is she okay with us saying that?
Yeah, I told her today. I was like, I'm 100% telling the story on the podcast.
Awesome.
And was standing at the bus stop, and this guy was talking to her friend. He then got on the bus, sat behind them, then got off like 20 minutes later. It is like 2:45 in the morning at this point. He then leans over into Rachel, hands her a business card. Rachel looks at the business card. He looks at her and says, if you're ever interested, girls, give me a call. The business card is for a foot fetish website. It's not even a website. It's his personal email address called, what was the email address?
Dublin Foot Party.
He also wrote down on the back of the card what he would like. He was into consensual fetish foreplay. He spelled consensual incorrectly.
Also, he did say, now, fair enough, strictly 18s plus.
He said strictly 18s plus.
He said, hey, I want to come on your feet. 18 plus only.
I've set up an email address today, and a bunch of men at work took pictures of their feet and sent it to me.
Hey, find the grossest feet pictures that you can find. Oh, actually, he probably ever went to that.
I also found a WikiHow page today, which is how to tell somebody that you're into foot fetish.
How do you tell them?
In an appropriate way. I'll send you the link
later.
Hey,
I like feet.
Yeah, no.
Hey, I don't know. How do you feel about feet?
No, some of it was, don't tell them straight away.
Yeah, clearly not.
Yeah, wait until you've been with them for some time. And then see how they feel about it. I'll send it to you, but I'm going to send him that because accosting a woman on the bus at 2:45 in the morning after she's been on a plane is not the appropriate place to be like, hey, could I wank all over your toes?
I hope he...
Call this episode, wank all over your toes.
Wank all over your toes. Foot wanking like this. Should we do this
case? Would you like to do the story?
Hey, Colin, tell us about the Patreon.
Sure thing, Lily Pops. Hey there, MMI fans, it's me, Colin, and do I have news for you. It's all going down over at www.patreon.com/murdermostirish, where we've totally revamped our Patreon offering for you mega fans. That's right, now all of your favourite Patreon stuff can be found in one place as we bring you our MMI Super Show exclusively for Patreon, featuring all the usual banter and chat between Emma and Sarah Jane, plus me thrown into the bargain, along with Lily's Tales, Maximilian's Bell Bag, and some surprises along the way. But that's not all. Every single week, due to popular demand, we will be bringing you a full-length story, whether it be Miscellaneous Most Irish for those cases that just don't fit on the main show, Murder Most International for those cases you guys have been crying out for, or even Music Most Awesome, where we talk about our favorite albums. But wait, there's even more! How about MMI Drive, the fan favorite podcast show where Emma and Sarah Jane drive around Dublin talking about all sorts of shite, plus our monthly Ask Me Arse segment where you get to pick the brains of the girls and maybe even ask me a question or two. So what are you waiting for? Come on over to www.patreon.com/murdermostirish and join in the fun for only €6 a month.
Give my mammy €6.
Anyway, so this week, I am going to cover the case of a young lady by the name of Amanda Jenkins, who was murdered in 2007. I got my references, I don't have them here on my other thing, but it's Irish Independent, The Evening Herald, Maru in a Mosque on Tita Cahir, Sunday World, and a few other articles that I found. Irish Times, sorry, I had the list, but it's on my laptop, but I'll pop all the links up.
Amanda Jenkins, you say?
Amanda Jenkins. So, Sunday, October 6, 2007, Anne Jenkins was in her flat on Rutland Street in Dublin City. It was early and she was drinking a cup of tea at her kitchen table when her phone started to ring. The name Stephen lit up the screen, and as much as Anne did not want to speak to him, she answered anyway. Stephen was her daughter, Amanda's boyfriend, and Anne did not trust or like him. Now, Amanda, they call her Mandy, so that's like her nickname. So okay. In some parts of this, the word, I'll say Mandy, because that's who they're talking about, just to let you know. She had called her daughter a few times that morning, but could not get an answer. And although not too concerned, she answered the phone to Stephen, hoping he might know where she was. Stephen told her that Amanda, or Mandy, as her friends and family called her, was feeling unwell and that she had quit her job.
Oh.
She was staying in bed and she would call Anne later.
She quit her job? Quit her
job. He was like, she's packed her job in. She's not feeling well this morning.
Sounds like me.
She's really stressed and she'll call you later. So Anne hung up on Stephen and then she tried calling Mandy's phone a number of times. Each time it went straight to voicemail. I rang him back, Anne told the Irish Independent. He told her that Mandy's phone, Anne told him that Mandy's phone was off and she couldn't get in contact with her. And Stephen then told her that Mandy was still asleep. He said, don't be worrying, I'll look after her. And I said, make sure that you do. So she tried to call him back, tried to call Amanda's phone after he was like, she's sick. Because obviously she packed in her job and she's sick. What the fuck's going on?
My mad lad be like, yeah, regular.
Sounds about right. So the next morning, Sunday, October 5th, Anne tried Mandy's phone again and there was still no answer.
Oh.
Anne was worried now. Her and Mandy spoke every day, sometimes multiple times a day. But Stephen had told her Mandy was sick. She decided to wait until lunch to call her again. Anne went upstairs and began tidying up, which is what I do
when you're stressed.
When I'm stressed and worried. It was a distraction. A little while later, she began walking down the stairs and the news began to play on the radio. She stood frozen. The body of a woman had been found in an apartment in Dublin's inner city, the newsreader said. The 27-year-old woman was found dead in James's Street and a 32-year-old man has been arrested. As Anne stood on the last step of her stairs in complete shock, she knew, she said, she knew that the body they had found was her daughter, Amanda. So Amanda, or Mandy Jenkins, was born in 1980 to her parents John and Anne and grew up in the Dublin 8 area. She attended school on Whitefriars Street, where she was known as an incredibly friendly and affable person. She made friends very quickly, and she had a habit of allowing people into her life and very easily and very openly, being very openly loving with people.
Oh, okay.
So one of her best friends said the thing about her is somebody would say that person's no good, and she'd be like, oh, no, give them a chance.
That's you.
Hopefully not to this extent. Oh, so Whitefriars Street, is that where that church is?
Yeah, Whitefriars Street is where the heart of St. Valentine is.
Is that the big church?
No.
Okay, sorry.
Do you know where, what was that dumpling place that we went to when we stayed in the hotel?
Oh, I know where it is.
Yeah.
I know where you're talking about. Sorry, I thought that was totally
Whitefriar Church is there.
Yeah.
And that's where the heart of St. Valentine is.
Yeah, I remember that church.
It's not a big church.
No, but I always think of
the YMCA.
I always think of that big, huge one on Thomas Street.
Oh, yeah. No.
That's the one I'm thinking of.
Is that St. Rita's?
That's the one. After finishing school, Amanda began working in a pub with her mother and the two lived together in a flat on Bride Street. In 2005, Anne decided to move to Rutland Street and for the first time ever, Amanda would have her own place. She was over the moon. She decorated the flat to her liking and would regularly have friends over for dinner and drinks. Although Anne and Amanda no longer lived together, the two remained incredibly close and spoke to each other every single day. A friend of Mandy's called her bond with Anne, quote, unbreakable. Amanda's love of people and ability not to judge and to see the best in everything was something she carried with her into adulthood, and some may say to her detriment. In early 2007, Amanda was working in a fruit and veg shop on Thomas Street and she was enjoying her newfound independence. Amanda had begun a relationship in 2003 with a man named Stephen Carney. She met Carney through a friend and the two hit it off and began dating. At the time of their meeting, Carney was on temporary release from prison. So their time together was short-lived as he was sent back to Port Leash prison.
Prison for Port Leash?
Yeah, you're going to find out. Yeah. Anne was immediately suspicious of Carney. And when she asked Mandy why he was in prison, she told her mother that was for a robbery and that she believed it was actually a case of mistaken identity.
No, you don't go to Port Leash.
No, not for that. Anne had no reason not to believe her daughter, but when she learned the full truth, she was horrified. So in 1996, Stephen Carney was part of a 12-man gang who attacked two heroin addicts, Josie Dwyer and Alan Byrne. The gang approached the men in Basin Lane flats before punching them and brutally beating the two. Alan Byrne escaped the attack, but Josie Dwyer succumbed to his injuries and passed away. Like, they beat him to a pulp. Carney was charged with manslaughter, but the charges were reduced when he pled guilty to lesser charges. In 2000, he was handed down a 20-month sentence for beating a man to death. However, in the 2 years between his arrest and that sentence in 1998, he joined the real IRA.
Yeah.
On May 1st, 1998, Carney, along with six other men, took part in an attempted robbery of a Securicore van in Ashford, County Wicklow. The six men, armed with pump-action shotguns, Kalashnikov assault rifles and revolvers, and a fake... What's those things called?
AK-47?
No, it's like a big... It's like a rocket launcher. Like a... What are they called? You know what I'm talking about?
Rocket launcher.
Is it what it's called? Yeah. And pump-action shotguns as well.
A bazooka.
Bazooka. Fake one.
Fuck off.
Posed as council workers and set up mock roadworks on the N11. When the van stopped, the seven men ordered the two men inside to get out. And when they refused, the gang attempted to pour petrol in the window to burn them out. So there was £250,000 in the van when they were trying to get it. The gang thought they could easily execute their plan, as at this time in Ireland, the Gardaí had gone on strike. However, there were members of the Gardaí who had not joined the so-called Blue Flu and were laying in wait. They descended upon the gang, shooting and killing one gang member, Ronan McLaughlin, who had tried to escape by carjacking an elderly couple. Carney was caught, sentenced to 8 years for his part in this crime. So she met him before he went into jail for this crime.
Okay.
It was while he was serving this time that he met Mandy. It is not known if Mandy knew the full extent of Carney's criminal past, or if her mother Anna had said she believed she was afraid of telling people for fear of judgment.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know, but that kind of sounds more realistic. Like Portlaoise prison?
Yeah, no, that's...
Like, you know this man. Yeah. You also are friends with his brother.
Portlaoise is because he's in the IRA.
Yeah, so I'm sure his brother would be like, yeah, my brother's in prison for this.
Yeah.
In 2006, Stephen Carney was released from prison and moved into Amanda's flat on James Street. Anne said initially Mandy seemed happy. She and Stephen were in love, and by Christmas 2006, they got engaged. Anne said she began to see a change in her daughter in early 2007 and that Stephen's behaviour was becoming possessive and controlling. Carney would constantly text and call Mandy when she left the flat, demanding to know where she was and who she was with. Anne remembered going to her daughter's flat one evening, and when Mandy walked her back to the gate as she was leaving, Carney began texting her and ringing her and asking her where she was. She was literally walking her mat to the gate. I told her, Anne told the Irish Independent, turn that phone off, you're only leaving the apartment, this is ridiculous. Anne called him manipulative, that he knew not to be abusive or cruel to Mandy while she was with them, but that sometimes the facade would slip. Even when he'd sometimes try and cut her down, Anne told the Irish Independent, I'd jump in and say, Stephen, don't talk to my daughter like that. Have respect. He couldn't get rid of me and I could stand up to him. Amanda's friends too began to see a change in her. Each time we saw her, a friend told the Tg Cathair documentary, Maru and Amashk, she was less and less her bubbly self. We knew he wasn't a person that she could trust. He kept Mandy away from us and her family as much as possible. We knew something wasn't right, which is the first thing.
Yeah.
Control people who want to control you do. As Anne's worry about Mandy increased, she recalled receiving a phone call from her daughter at 1 a.m. and like weeks before. Amanda was frantic. She was crying and barely able to speak. When Anne asked her what was wrong, she said, Stephen hit me. Anne said she jumped out of bed, got a taxi to Amanda's home in her pajamas. When she reached the home, she called her and asked her to open the gate. Amanda ran to her mother, and before Anne could say anything, Amanda said to her, Ma'am, please don't say anything to him. He didn't mean it. It was just fucking heartbreaking. Anne, shocked, scared and confused, entered the flat where she found Stephen Carney sitting on the floor in the hallway. He had his hands on his face and he was crying. He told Anne he was sorry, that he didn't mean to hurt Amanda, and that he simply could not deal with the outside life. He was in prison for 6 years. Sir, it's not like you're fucking yeah. Shawshank Redemption'd. You're in Portlaoise with an Xbox for 6 years.
Yeah.
So Anne told Mandy to get some clothes and she brought her back to her flat. The next day, Mandy did not go to work. Anne said she was deeply upset and she had a black eye from where he hit her. That evening, Mandy received a phone call from Carney. Anne, overwhelmed with worry for her daughter, begged her not to meet with him, but Mandy would not listen. She told Anne that she just wanted to see what Carney had to say. This is such a textbook case of how these relationships work.
Yeah.
Like, it's insane. Anne said she sat in Sheehan's bar and cried. The staff asked her what was wrong and she told them, my daughter is going back to him and he will be the death of her. Weeks later, Anne's biggest fear would come to pass. Sunday the 7th of October, Anne listened to a radio newscaster tell her that her daughter was dead. In a panic, she rang next door to her neighbour Patrick. She cried out that Mandy was dead. He tried to calm her, saying that they didn't know if it was Mandy. As they spoke, Anne looked out the window and saw two Gardaí walking towards her flat door. Before they could get to Anne's, Patrick ran outside and asked them, "Is it true?" Solemnly, they replied that they were so sorry, but Amanda Jenkins was dead. Anne was in complete shock. Nothing seemed real and she had no idea what to do. Her friends, family, neighbours and community rallied around her in the days following the horrific news, making sure she had food and company, refusing to leave her by herself. As the shock ricocheted throughout the tight-knit community, details on what had happened to Amanda began to surface. On Sunday morning, October 7th, a 999 operator received a call from a man in James's Street, Dublin 8. He told the operator that his girlfriend was dead, that he had strangled her and tried to take his own life, and that the Gardaí needed to come to the flat. When the Gardaí arrived at the third floor flat in the Anne Olivia flats on James's Street, they found Stephen Carney in the bedroom. He was crying and had blood on his arms. He pointed to a bin where he had placed a blade and told the Gardaí that he tried to cut himself, but it didn't work. Try harder. He then told them that he had strangled his girlfriend on Friday night and that she was in the living room. Garda Paul Maher cautioned Carney and then entered the living room where he found Amanda Jenkins' body covered in a duvet. The Gardaí took Carney to the station and Dr. Mary Cassidy arrived to examine the scene. So they interviewed Carney and he told them that he had arrived to the flat he shared with Amanda on Friday evening at 8 p.m. Amanda was already there having finished work at 7:30. Carney said that when he walked through the door, the whole flat smelled like cannabis and this really angered him.
What?
Carney said the two began to have an argument and Amanda had slapped him. He then put his hands around her neck and she fell to the floor. Carney followed her onto the floor and continued to strangle her. He kept his hands around her throat until she turned blue and stopped moving. Carney then covered the body with a duvet and told the Gardaí he sat with her for 2 hours, intermittently trying to wake her up. He said,
"Call the ambulance now."
No. He said, quote, "I just sat there looking at her crying. I kept slapping her face and saying, 'Wake up, Mandy, wake up, love.'" This motherfucker. He then got up, showered, changed his clothes, left the flat and went to a pub. He met his father there and they began drinking. When Gardaí asked him if he had told his father about the violent incident, he told him no, that he'd wanted to, but he couldn't. Oh, he also told them that he got up and got dressed because he was going to go to Kevin Street Garda Station and he got halfway there and just couldn't go in.
Oh.
Yeah, that definitely happened.
What a difficult time for him.
Carney then spent the entirety of the Saturday, the next day,
drinking,
getting drunk with his friends and doing cocaine. He had won €1,000 betting on horses the previous Friday and admitted he spent over half of this on drugs alone. He then returned to the flat on Sunday morning.
And when he was annoyed that she was smoking cannabis.
Cannabis, but he was shoving coke up his arsehole.
Oh, okay.
He then returned to the flat on Sunday morning and told the Gardaí he attempted suicide by taking an overdose. Guess how he attempted suicide? 2 packets of Anadin.
But he'd been doing coke?
But he'd been doing cocaine. The bug of sugar.
Like. Is there proof that he took this Anadin? No. 2 packets of Anadin?
2 packets of Anadin. I'll tell you why he bought 2 packets of Anadin. Because he had a fucking headache from all the cocaine he was doing.
Like.
He then tried to slice his wrists, but that too didn't work.
Because he didn't try hard enough.
Yeah, and then he called 999.
Oh.
Then when Gardaí asked him if he had meant to kill Amanda, he told them no, that he didn't know why he had reacted the way he did. When Gardaí asked him if he believed if he had called an ambulance, it could have saved Amanda's life, he said yes, that he believed so. When Gardaí asked Carney if he had meant to kill Amanda, he told them no, and this is what he said, that he wasn't that type of person. I would never hurt a fly, except for that man that I beat to death. And those other men in that secure
that I tried to set on fire.
Who I was going to set on fire.
And Mandy, who I slapped.
Who I was clearly regularly abusing.
Yeah.
Anne Jenkins was still reeling from the loss of her daughter. And it would be 2 weeks before Mandy's body would be returned to her for burial. A post-mortem was carried out by Dr. Mary Cassidy. And then Carney's defence team requested an independent post-mortem delaying Mandy's return.
Why?
So the reason that it took so long for the second post-mortem is they were trying to find an independent doctor who wasn't linked to the state.
Why?
And apparently it took ages to do that because they wanted a doctor that wasn't linked to...
But like Dr. Mary Cassidy is linked to the state. She has no skin in the game.
Yeah, they were like, we don't want that.
She's not linked to conviction. She's not linked to, like
I'm going to take the ball down. That's not her job. Like, so... When we got Mandy's body back and told the Irish Independent, we weren't allowed to touch her because he'd left her there for 36 hours. If we touched her, her skin would have come away.
Oh.
I looked into the coffin and I could see the fear and the panic in her face. It doesn't get easier. This is just something I have to live with. So on the 20th of October, Amanda Jenkins was finally laid to rest. 200 people packed St. Patrick's Church in Ringsend to say their final goodbyes to a kind, thoughtful, beautiful person whose life was cruelly taken from her. Father Fergal McDonough officiated the mass, telling Amanda's devastation of family and friends, quote, "Although this is the end of Amanda's physical presence, love transcends death and she will always be near to us." He also noted how the delay in receiving Amanda's body had deeply affected the family, quote, "Generally, there are 3 days of pain between a death and a burial. However, there has not just been 3 days of pain for Amanda's family. There has been a whole 2 weeks." Fair play to him for bringing it up. Like.
Yeah.
Amanda was buried in Palmerstown Cemetery. So on the 4th of November 2008, Amanda Jenkins' murder trial began. A jury of 8 men and 4 women were sworn in and the trial was...
Really pleaded not guilty.
Was presided over by Justice Paul Carney. Oh, he really pled not guilty to murdering Amanda Jenkins, but he did accept that he strangled Amanda and was responsible for her death. So manslaughter. He said there was no intent or premeditation to what he did, that he didn't mean to kill her. So that was their entire argument.
There are moments like this where I hate the Irish judicial
system. Honestly, scum-like. Carney's defence, Michael O'Higgins, explained that because Carney accepted his role in Amanda's death, that certain facts were accepted by both the defence and prosecution and that the trial would be shorter. So the trial was 6 days.
Okay.
The prosecution argued that Carney had known exactly what he was doing, he accepted what he had done, and that he admitted that calling an ambulance would have saved Amanda's life. And the first day, Anne Jenkins took to the stand. She remembered being terrified, as she'd never been to court before. She had to sit in front of the man who killed her daughter and try to keep her composure. She told the court about the phone call Stephen had made to her, that he told her Amanda was sick and had quit her job, and that's why she wasn't answering her phone. Anne would learn later that Amanda had been dead for nearly 12 hours at this point, her body laying on the floor in the flat she loved so much. A co-worker of Amanda's, Catherine O'Connor, took to the stand and told the court that Amanda was due to open the fruit and veg shop on Saturday morning, but she had not turned up. She called Amanda's phone, but there was no answer, so instead she texted Carney. He said he would ask Amanda to ring her in an hour. So he kind of covered his bases with this because he was like, she's not going into work, she can't open up, so I'm going to tell her mash quit her job in case the manager of the shop rings her. Garda Paul Mara gave evidence about entering the flat and finding Amanda's body. He said Carney was distraught and told him that he tried to take his own life a number of times. Mara told the court he cautioned Carney and a doctor was called who pronounced Amanda dead. Stephen Carney was then arrested at the scene. On Wednesday, November 5th, state pathologist Dr. Mary Cassidy was called to give evidence. Anne Jenkins sat in the court for 20 minutes with tears streaming down her face as Dr. Cassidy recalled what happened to her daughter. Anne's hands trembled as she touched the gold cross around her neck, as Dr. Mary Cassidy described Amanda's face having a purple hue to it. Dr. Cassidy explained that the colour was due to blocked blood vessels in Amanda's throat. Amanda had been dead for at least 24 hours as rigor mortis was already wearing off. Bruising was noted on Amanda's neck and her hyoid bone had been snapped. Amanda's cause of death was strangulation and no attempt at resuscitation had been made. The court were then shown photographs of the flat and of Amanda's body.
Does rigor mortis wear off?
Yeah, so rigor mortis is like you're really stiff on the body and then eventually, like, it's kind of what happened because he couldn't touch her as well.
Because
it kind of your body starts to
break down.
So evidence of Carney's interviews were played for the court. The prosecution advised the jury to be sceptical about Carney's confession to the Gardaí. They believed Amanda had done nothing to provoke Carney's violent reaction, that he knew what he was doing and his refusal to call an ambulance and then go out on a drug and drink binge for two days spoke volumes. Also, the whole argument for Carney was like she pissed him off, so he strangled her. Like that's kind of what they were arguing.
Yeah.
Insane. That's insane. Like, fuck, man. They were also told that Carney's alleged suicide attempts were not relevant. The prosecution drew the jury's attention to the scratch marks that had been on Carney's face, evidence of Amanda Jenkins fighting for her life as he held his hands around her throat and squeezed until she died. Michael O'Higgins argued that it was not Carney's intent to murder Amanda. Instead, he had been enraged after an argument. He also contacted the Gardaí to give himself up, albeit after a delay. Without the intent to kill, he told the jury, the verdict in this case should be manslaughter and not murder. The jury were told they had three options open to them. Guilty of murder, guilty of manslaughter, and not guilty of either. Because Carney had admitted he was the cause of Amanda's death, it was the jury's job to decide what his intent was. Did he mean to kill Amanda? On Saturday morning, the jury returned. They found Stephen Carney guilty of the murder of Amanda Jenkins. Amanda's uncle, Robert McLean, gave a victim impact statement on behalf of the family. He told the court that Amanda was an amazing girl and that his sister was utterly consumed by guilt, by grief. Sorry. He said the Carneys still had their son, but all his family, their family had left of Amanda were memories. Carney's defence team read a letter in which Carney expressed his sincere remorse for what he had done to Amanda and how deeply sorry he was to her family.
You mean because he had to leave the repercussions of his actions?
Anne Jenkins said she would never accept his apology, and it was the family's belief that his apology letter was only made so when he appealed it could be used.
Yeah.
She's dead right. Carney's criminal background was then, so before this, nobody in the jury or the court knew. His criminal background was then presented to Judge Carney, along with his record of violence, illegal activity, and a membership with the Real IRA, who, by the way, kicked him out for being too violent.
Yeah.
Judge Paul Carney handed down a mandatory life sentence, which, by the way, was 15 years. On November 10th, Amanda's uncle Robert and her mother Anne spoke to Jason O'Brien for the Irish Independent. Robert told Jason that Carney had been abusive to Amanda prior to murdering her, and he had confronted Carney at their niece's wedding, telling him that any man who raised his hand to a woman was not a man. He said they had all begged Amanda to get away from Carney, but almost felt as if she thought she could fix him. Robert also said he stopped going to Amanda's flat as he couldn't stand being in the same room as Carney. Anne, in the same interview, said she believed the reason Carney gave for the argument with Amanda was not true. She knew Amanda had been in receipt of €4,000 from a previous employer and that Amanda had kept the money in the house. She said, there was evidence that the money was taken. So there is a very real possibility that there was a row over the money and that is what kicked everything off.
So is that €1,000 then not a bet? Don't know.
In 2011, Stephen Carney launched an appeal against his conviction and his sentence. Of course he did. Stephen's team believed that the photos of Amanda's body should not have been shown to the jury, that it was highly unusual and had not happened in a murder case in Ireland before. They argued that the court was wrongfully shown evidence that was harmful to his case. They believed the pictures could have prejudiced the jury towards Carney and his admission of manslaughter. This appeal was completely rejected. They were like, you did it.
Yeah.
You did this. We're showing people. Carney's life sentence of 15 years was upheld and he spent the first half of his sentence in a closed prison. However, the second half was to be sent in an open prison after a parole appeal was accepted on his behalf. In 2020, it was discovered that Carney had been allowed to leave prison to meet members of his family. Anne Jenkins asked the Minister for Justice to implement the Parole Act of 2019, asking that Carney's sentence be increased and that he not be allowed to leave prison. Anne says every time her phone rings, she feels utter terror that this is the day she is told Carney has been released from prison. People say it gets easier, Anne said, but it doesn't. Not once did he show any sign of remorse, not once. He was smiling and winking at members of his family all through the proceedings. It feels as if I'm doing the life sentence and not him.
Yeah.
Last December, Stephen Carney was allowed to leave prison on temporary release to spend Christmas with his family. And so far, he's still currently in prison, but they're getting him ready to leave. So when they bring them to those open plan prisons, it's to integrate them back into society. To be integrated into a wood chipper is how I feel personally. But that is the story of the murder of Amanda Jenkins. Her mother breaks my heart. There's a documentary series on TG Car called Maru in Her Mask. And it's all about murders in Ireland.
Yeah, it's
and
very it's good.
Fantastic. And that episode, I was like in tears watching it. She is that poor. I'm not going to say her because she's very strong. She's fucking broken.
Yeah.
The woman's broken. Like her sister, her daughter was taken from her. Like in the most horrific fucking manner. They tried everything to get her away from him. But they couldn't. Because unfortunately these.
How do you do that?
There was a specialist, a domestic violence specialist on the show. And she said, the only thing that you can really do is say to them, I'm here. Leave it open for them. Be like, I'm not going anywhere. I'm not going to abandon you. When you're ready, come to me. She said, because what happens is if you say to them, if you go back to him, I'm never speaking to you again. They immediately go, well, she's never going to speak to me again. So I'm just going to go back to him. So she was like, don't do that. As frustrating as it can be, She was like, leave space open for them so they can come to you when. And the thing is, Anne had said that she had received a phone call from Mandy a couple of weeks before saying she was getting away from him. She couldn't do it anymore. But she just kept going back to him. Like, I think we all have somebody in our life has done that, unfortunately. And it's desperately sad and you don't know what to do.
Yeah.
But as that lady said, just leave space open for them to know that they can come to you when they need to.
Yeah.
And that they're safe with you. That's, don't push them away. And then obviously his uncle said as well, the more they tried to get her away from him, the more she went to him. The more they were like, you need to get the fuck away from him. It was almost like, well, no, he's not that bad. He's not a bad person. Like, it was that kind of thing. But he was a bad person. He is a bad person.
Yeah.
But anyway, my thoughts.
Good job, my dude.
Yeah, thoughts and prayers to Amanda Jenkins' family because they're fucking devastated, the poor things. But yes, that is this week's case. Obviously, I'm going to put some links to helplines in the notes. If any of you are experiencing anything of the sort, please try and get some help. Know that you're not alone.
Yeah.
Your family love you, your friends love you, and they just want the best for you at the end of the day. That's all they fucking want. And unfortunately, Amanda's case turns out like a lot of cases in these instances do, where the man kills her.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's all I got. You got anything else, dude?
No, that was, they're all sad stories, but that's,
I know. I'm going to let you go home. You're very tired.
Give me a little roll.
I will, but you're very tired. I am
actually really tired.
You're exhausted. I can see it in your eyes. Your eyes are half asleep. But we will be back next week, friends.
Yeah, happy Christmas, everybody. It's fucking freezing.
It's freezing, but more fun and frolics and terribleness. And thank you to everybody that came to my show, The Movie Tomorrow. Yeah, is that what you'd say?
Yeah.
Thank you retroactively for coming to the thing. I really, really appreciate it.
Yeah, Emma's going to do an amazing job.
Emma's going to be
I'm very
the back
excited.
Drink.
No, you're not.
I'm going to have a couple of drinks.
Yeah, but you're not going to be at the back. You're at the front hosting this motherfucker.
I might have gone up to be like, welcome everybody, here's the film. And then afterwards be like, here's Scott. And then that's it.
Have you not got something to say to him?
Oh, you have to do 15 minutes. Yeah. That's next one.
What's the first thing you're going to say? So what's your favourite colour?
So. No, I have no idea. I already did an interview with him, so I'm like.
So, you know.
I'll figure out what to say.
What's the next movie about?
Yeah, but like, everybody go see his new movie.
Who's your favourite band?
His new movie is coming out. And everybody should go see it. It's about Joe Keithley from DOA. And it's a great documentary. And everybody should go see the documentary.
DOA.
Go see the documentary if you can. It's fantastic. Anyway, okay. So goodbye, because you're wrecked.
Bye, everybody. Bye. Close approximation to a HR violation when I'm working at work, working at work, work.